So what's happening now, all the universities, they have this very active herbicide eval programs. And our colleague at the University of Illinois and USDA, Dr. Marty Williams, with one of his postdoc scientists, Christopher Landahl, what they're doing now, they're gathering all this past 30 years of herbicide eval work from all across the U.S. Mm. And they're cranking out some amazing work looking at weed response to herbicide over years so we can have a better understanding of resistance. What's happening now, you know, like last year was a drought year. This year, it's a very, very wet year here in Wisconsin. So drought in 2023, very wet in 2024. Environment plays a key role in how herbicides perform. So now they're able to look back and say, look, if you have wet conditions, dry conditions, hot, cool, this is how these herbicides are performing. And these are, you know, according to this massive data set, these are the herbicides that work under such conditions.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. A robust return on your sorghum investment is not just a dream. Learn more at doubleteamsorghum.com. KWS Hybrid Rye, seeding the future since 1856.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I am Brian Arnell, and I'm coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, our guest is Dr. Rodrigo Wuerl. He is an associate professor and extension cropping systems weed scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Dr. Wuerl's research and extension program, aka Wisconsin Weeds or WISC Weeds, focuses on integrated approaches to weed management in corn, soybean, and small grains in Wisconsin farm systems. His research program is interested in agroecologically based approaches to address sustainable weed management in agronomic crops, distribution, and management of herbicide-resistant weeds, along with the biology and ecology of troublesome weed species. This drives his extension program to serve Wisconsin growers, consultants, and the agricultural industry professionals. Well, Rodrigo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Brian, it's great to be here. That was a mouthful, wasn't it?
It was. Your bio is easier than others. I'll give you that.
That's great.
So share with our audience, or, you know, our audience here, how did you make your way from, and I know your background, so how did you make your way from Brazil to Wisconsin? Because those two don't share a lot of commonality.
Yeah, well, agriculture is the common point there, I would say. But yeah, so, you know, I was born and raised in Brazil. I grew up in a small community of Dutch immigrants in São Paulo State in the southeast part of Brazil. So I grew up surrounded by agriculture. I myself, you know, I was born and raised on a farm. Unfortunately, we lost the farm due to, you know, many circumstances when I was quite young. So we left the farm, but, you know, the farm never left me. So with that, I went on to study agronomy at São Paulo State University. I got my bachelor's degree, and I know you have hosted a lot of Brazilian students as well, Brian. So, you know, like during my studies there as an undergrad, our degrees are very applied, okay, as you got to know quite well. And we do a lot of internships, okay. And through the years, I did a lot of internships, and I realized grad school was something I wanted to do. At that point, I also realized the importance of learning English, right? To speak English, you know, anymore. Brazil is a powerhouse, agricultural powerhouse, and, you know, just like the United States. So I quickly realized that learning to speak English was going to be something important for my career. And at that point, a lot of my students or my friends in college were actually coming to the States for their final internship. So when you're in college in Brazil, you got to do a mandatory internship. Before you graduate, that's a full semester, and you can do it at a research institution. You can work for a company, crop consulting. You can go spend time on a farm. I decided to come to the United States. And back then, I was exploring the opportunities between actually going to Oklahoma State University or University of Nebraska-Lincoln. It worked out that I ended up going to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. I spent 5 amazing months there working under Dr. Mark Bernards, who was the extension weed scientist at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And I also worked very closely with Lois Sandell, who at that point was the extension weed scientist at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And those individuals had a tremendous impact on my career from that point on. So I did my internship. My plan was to be here in the United States in Nebraska for 5 months, go back home, get a master's, and hopefully become a crop consultant. That was my dream, you know, at that point. But then I came here and things really changed. I ended up coming back after my internship. I did my master's there at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And then I stayed on for my PhD. For my PhD, I worked under Dr. John Lindquist, who is the weed ecologist at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Right after I finished my PhD, I was offered an opportunity to work at Nebraska at the West Central Research and Extension Center in North Platte. So I started off as a system professor, extension cropping system specialist, was there for about a year and a half, and then the unique opportunity to move to Wisconsin in January of 2018 came online, where I then became the extension weed scientist here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So long story short here, that's kind of how I left Brazil, you know, with a dream to come here, learn more about American agriculture, learn about, you know, learn more English. Uh-huh. And, you know, 13, 14 years later, here we are. So it's amazing how it goes.
It's a great story, and one that I don't know how much is known, you know, outside of the academic circles. And it's not even, I don't even know how many academics know, but there's a lot of, specifically Brazilians, and heavily Sao Paulo. I mean, Sao Paulo provides a lot of interns and academics. But I see growing numbers. There's always been a strong population of interns and graduate students at Oklahoma State, at Kansas State, at Nebraska, and I've seen it elsewhere. But I'll just say from my side, you know, the internship opportunity for me is great because I get to meet a great deal of students. They work hard. They really take care of themselves as communities. The Brazilian community is an interesting community. Almost every university I've been to, there's a family-like system. So I charge mine with finding their replacements. So I've got two interns right now that one was going to stay as a master's. She just got a job. So it's their jobs to find the replacements, and they take it seriously. They do the interviews, they do the background checks, and it keeps an amazing system. I've pulled some great students, but I guess even the average farmer, probably at least throughout the Great Plains, would notice that the extension, state extension specialists, are becoming more diversified, especially when it comes to the Brazilians. I mean, we've got a lot of the Brazilians and some Argentinians in the extension realm nationwide. And so, you know, why do you think it works so well specifically with the Brazil in US? Because I just look at what's across the landscape of extension and academia. And really for me, maybe it's just because we're in Oklahoma, Brazil is one of the dominant. That's one of my first go-tos.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. And I think for me, similar to you, I've moved away. I moved out of Brazil in, you know, 2010 now. I've been away for a long time. And, you know, still every year we recruit visiting scholars. We have three or four graduate students from Brazil. You know, it's a really good question, and I reflect a lot on that. I think the one thing is that we're truly passionate about applied agriculture. Mm-hmm. And then during our trainings, either in Brazil and also in Argentina, what I get to learn, what I realize is that, you know, we always have the grower in mind. So I think that's why we have this affinity with extension, mm-hmm. if you would. We do have a very strong extension system in Brazil through Embrapa, right? You know, which would be the equivalent of the USDA here. They do research there, but they also do extension. You do see some extension through the Brazilian universities, but it's not the same system like we have here in the US, okay? So most of us, when we come here, we love applied agriculture. We love helping growers. And then through the universities, we have this very strong extension system. And that's what blew my mind when I came, when I watched Dr. Mark Bernard doing applied research and Lois Sandell doing applied research, and then inviting growers to their plots and then traveling all winter long giving talks. It says, this is a really cool job, okay? And I think a lot of folks like myself, when they get here young, you know, they want to, you know, work in agriculture, applied agriculture, and they want to help growers. I think this is where we shine, I guess. So that's why we've had this opportunity. And on top of all that, it's not that I am just like going after Brazilian students, or you might be going after students from Argentina. There is a need, right? We need to hire graduate students. And I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Brian, but our agronomy program here at UW-Madison, it's really small right now. And I talked to colleagues in several universities. We have fewer and fewer American students, uh-huh. Studying agronomy right now. And very few of them want to stay on for graduate school. Sometimes they don't understand what graduate school is. Sometimes they just want to be done and get a job. So we really want to recruit the American students to stay on.
Yeah.
But the demand is high, and there's not enough students that are graduating, at least as far as I'm concerned, that want to come uh-huh. and work in my weed science program here. So we need to get the work done. We have a lot of work to get done, and we have all these passionate individuals that are, overseas that want to come. And so all together, I think that's uh-huh. why we're seeing this shift now on, who are the extension specialists out there and why we're seeing a lot more folks like myself and some other colleagues from South America taking over this types of positions.
That's a great point, because we do see a lot of that with me. So I've been in my job almost 20 years now, and I see the cycle. And so we go through this cycle of available students, and a lot of my funding is U.S. federal based, and so I do look for students. The commodity groups want to see local kids or Oklahoma state kids, because it's the state of Oklahoma wheat or state of Oklahoma soybean. But you're right. A lot of those, you graduate with an agronomy degree with a bachelor's, and the job opportunities are a lot better than getting paid a master's stipend. And so, and a good agronomist is often hard to find and applied. And I do agree completely that a lot of what I like about the training, and it's not just the Sao Paulo State, there's a lot of other universities in Brazil and Argentina, but they fit what I see as what we do well in the Plain States is applied agronomy. The universities I spoke of, including Wisconsin, are still heavily applied agronomy, and we still do a lot of that. And so I think it does suit well. Well, moving that, I've wasted enough of your time on this podcast on that. Just, I think it's a fascinating topic to get into. And I do believe our audience would like that. But let's shift into actual agronomy research. Rodrigo, what is your program doing as far as weed science? What's some of the things at the forefront of your program?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So being the extension state specialist here for Wisconsin, we're constantly evolving to address the growers' needs, right? So since I started here in 2018, this is the year that here in Wisconsin, water hemp was, pigweed was exploding mm-hmm. across the state as far as resistance goes. So resistance management has become the top priority of our research and extension program here. So we have a very active front of research in the greenhouse where we're doing monitoring of herbicide resistance. So we have, our growers, they collect seeds in the fall and then they send our way. And then we spend, the year screening them in the greenhouse and letting our growers know whether they're dealing with novel cases of resistance or not. So that has been a big part of our work. We have a very active herbicide evaluation program. We work closely with the crop protection industry. Every year, we're running about 70 different sponsored trials from the crop protection industry. Ryan Dwerf, research specialist in my program, he's the coordinator of that effort. And that effort takes up a lot of our time. So Ryan is the one managing planting, but then we need our army of graduate students to make sure that we're spraying on time, collecting data on time. And that's the challenging part of the weed science, applied weed science world, I would, because mm-hmm. you plant pre-emergent herbicide applications, monitor, take data, post applications, collect, a lot of data, then you do biomass, and then things hopefully slow down a little bit in August so we can catch our breath before, end of season data collection and harvest goes. So that's very active. And I want to say that that's been very rewarding despite the amount of work, because we have really seen a change on what our farmers out there are doing. Because we do all this work. Ryan puts this amazing research report at the end of every year. We host 3-4 field days throughout the season. And then in the winter months, I'm talking about it. So I think we're having an impact helping our growers and consultants and even the crop protection industry fine-tune the recommendations for our local needs here in the state of Wisconsin. And then moreover, some folks say, hey, it's a lot of spray and pray type of trials. Some of our colleagues, more on the ecology side, and they kind of give us a hard time.
I would never have used spray and pray as a term for a weed scientist ever.
Right? Nozzlehead, that's what we go get called and all that. But anyways, so what's happening now, all the universities, they have this very active herbicide eval programs. And our colleague at the University of Illinois and USDA, Dr. Marty Williams, with one of his postdoc scientists, Christopher Landall, what they're doing now, they're gathering all this past 30 years of herbicide eval work from all across the U.S. Mm. And they're cranking out some amazing work looking at weed response to herbicide over years so we can have a better understanding of resistance. What's happening now, you know, like last year was a drought year. This year, it's a very, very wet year here in Wisconsin. So drought in 2023, very wet in 2024. Environment plays a key role in how herbicides perform. So now they're able to look back and say, look, if you have wet conditions, dry conditions, hot, cool, this is how these herbicides are performing. And these are, you know, according to this massive data set, these are the herbicides that work under such conditions. Mm-hmm. So it's beautiful now that we have this tremendous database, and it's very nice that we get to collaborate in this effort. So I think this is kind of where we're all going, right? We're all looking for big data now. So look back at what has happened over the 30 years so we can help growers with the, you know, decisions here in the next 10 years. So that's a big part of what we're up to these days, trying to make sure we have all this data from multiple years organized. So then our colleagues now in Illinois can keep, you know, summarizing this data with the skill set that they have there, managing, you know, this monstrous amount of data that they have now.
So, Dr. Worley, I'm gonna do what I do with extension specialists. Researchers tend to like to stick with the questions and the topics they provide me, but extension specialists, I don't follow the rules with folks like you. So we're gonna go off the trail, off the tracks, one might say, Rodrigo. And I wanna ask you kind of to spend a moment or two and discuss in where you see it. When I look at weed science and I look at the challenges we have with resistance, the lack of new chemistries, all these things happening at the same time as this conscious effort of saving carbon and reducing tillage, how do you approach weed management with the challenges where you have? And I'll be honest, at least in my region, tillage might be one of our few solutions. However, you know, Oklahoma is much like Western Nebraska. We don't have organic matter. Residue is critical. For us, cover crop may not be that great of an option because of moisture. How do you balance as a weed scientist the societal wants of carbon sequestration and the challenges of herbicide resistance? I know that's a big question, and I'm hoping you kind of synthesized what I was asking.
No, that is a beautiful question. And, you know, and I'm going to link this question to the previous one because you asked, you know, what are we up to? I talked about the resistance monitoring. I talked about all the herbicide eval work. And then the next topic was actually going to be kind of what you asked. We are doing a lot of research here looking at how cover crops can help us with weed management. Okay. And I do fully understand and appreciate the challenges that you all have out west, you know, Oklahoma, Kansas, Western Nebraska. You need the moisture and you got to be strategic. But what we're learning here, Brian, is this in between, right? Because no-till is great, but in no-till, you put a lot of reliance on herbicides. Mm-hmm. You're talking about burn down, whether you're talking kochia out there for you, horseweed in Nebraska, or, you know, here in Wisconsin, we still do a lot of tillage. So what I'm dealing with, I'm coming to a state where tillage is predominant, and there's this big switch straight from tillage into now we're heavily interested in no-till plus cover crop. Mm-hmm. So we don't have this, you know, like no-till phase. But then back to the original question, I have one of my graduate students, Guilherme Chudzik, he's preparing right now to defend. And we were having this discussion because in his work, we have tillage, no-till, and no-till plus high biomass zero rye cover crop. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at an early weed here in Wisconsin, which is giant ragweed, early season weed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so giant ragweed for us here in Wisconsin, similar to kochia for y'all out west. It comes early, it's aggressive, okay? So you got to manage early. What Guilherme is learning is that tillage can help a lot, okay, managing ragweed. Because you till, you clean it, you don't have to spray. But then you're disturbing your soil. If we're just doing no-till, then we're going to be spraying, relying a lot on burn-down herbicides and, you know, early season post-emergence weed control. So relying heavily on herbicides as well. The no-till plus cover crop helps with suppression, okay, mm-hmm. because you have that biomass of the cover crop in there, assuming you have enough moisture to afford the growth mm-hmm. of the biomass. So what our research has looked at is how much biomass of the CRI cover crop biomass do we need? Because just having a cover crop out there is not good enough from a mm-hmm. weed suppression standpoint. Yep. You need to be able to accumulate enough biomass. And then do you have enough moisture early season to allow that to happen? Mm-hmm. Here in Wisconsin, we always do, you know, most times we do. Last year was not the case. 2023 was not the case. But we usually have the opposite where we have excessive moisture in the spring.
Yes.
So for us here, so that's, and that's the other thing that Guilherme, through his master's work, because we did the work here in Wisconsin, we also did the work in Nebraska. So the message, you got to be careful when you take mm-hmm. data from Wisconsin and try to translate to your conditions. And that's the beauty of multi-state work. Mm-hmm. We want to understand the big picture, trying to address the societal needs. We know we want more carbon. We want all that. So let's put this, all these beautiful trials. But we also need to understand what the local conditions are. Because at the end of the day, we need our growers to stay profitable, right? And mm-hmm. growers know what they're up to. They know what they're doing. So you also got to rely on them. Look, will this fit or not? Is this something that we can work with or not? Okay. So cover crops can really help with weed management. If you have winter annual weeds, let's talk about horseweed. Yeah. If you have a cereal rye cover crop going, cereal rye is very effective at suppressing horseweed. Mm-hmm. I had plots in Nebraska when I was there in western Nebraska. A cereal rye cover crop alone provided more than 95% control of horseweed or mare's tail. It's better than almost better than a herbicide in that scenario. Okay, so it worked for that scenario. So you don't need a whole lot of biomass for horseweed. Mm-hmm. But if you're thinking about using your cereal rye cover crop biomass to suppress pigweeds, Palmer amaranth for you guys, water hemp, you need 5,000 pounds of dry matter. This is what our research is telling us. So Rodrigo, I'm a grower. I don't clip biomass. What are you talking about? It's about 30 inches tall rye. Can you afford to let that rye grow until past that boot stage and then kill it with glyphosate? Because if you can, if you have enough moisture for that, and if you have good equipment for no-till planting, our research is showing that for soybeans, you're not going to impact yield, and you still and you get a lot of good suppression of the pigweeds. Don't do that with corn.
Yeah, no.
Soybeans, yeah. But ahead of soybeans, it's a beautiful system.
I have another question now, because you've triggered something else that I've been wondering about. And it's the same in nutrient management. I want to make this statement that it's not just your science, it's fertility and others. As the way we look at things, the way we look at management, because most of our recommendations have been based work on 80s, 90s, and 2000s, on our base strategies. As we look at herbicide management, has there been much work in the change of the amount of residue we're dealing with when we're applying herbicides? Because I look at it as, I'm pretty sure, and you, especially in the western part where we're dry and we don't have irrigation, we can be hindered with our herbicide because of residue might be preventing good movement into the soil because of residue. Is that something that's just in my head, or where's the science at?
Excellent question. That question is in your head and it's also in my head. Most times, I think when efficacy trials are done, what we do so we get enough, weed distribution our plots, we till. So most of the herbicide trials, majority, I'm not going to say all of them, but most of the trials when we're evaluating a scenario where there's no crop residue on the soil surface because we want to have even weed emergence and distribution, mm-hmm. all right? And I've been trying to get funding to support some of this work because it's very expensive, and I have a hard time securing federal funding for that, Brian, because it's herbicide work.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of work that needs to be done, especially after I started working with cover crops with our graduate students. I have a former PhD student, Jose Junior Nunes, that did a fabulous amount of work looking at how rye, for instance, intercepts residual herbicides. The more biomass, guess what? Less herbicides will make into the soil at the time of application. Mm-hmm. And then from that time onwards, it all depends on the properties of the chemical. Some herbicides are photostable, some are not. Some herbicides have higher solubility, some don't. Mm-hmm. So that is a big question right now that our program has. The student Guilherme that just finished his master's, he's going to stay on as a PhD. And what you asked is exactly his PhD research. We're looking at clean plots with no residue, no-till plots, and heavy cover crop biomass. How is that impacting the fate of multiple herbicides? So what we're trying to do here is recommend growers, okay, if you're in a tillage scenario, this herbicide tends to work quite well. Mm-hmm. If you're in a heavy biomass scenario because of cover crops and so on, maybe herbicides X, Y, and Z are better. So we have started a series of plot work, spraying, collecting soil samples. We're working with Dr. Tom Mueller down in Tennessee so he can analyze the herbicide in soils. But that's the one thing I want to say. So the Roundup Ready area hit us really hard. And that used to be a science. There were a lot of scientists all over the U.S. that studied herbicide fate in the environment.
Very few.
There are very few right now. Dr. Tom Mueller is one of them. There are very few right now. And I think that's a discipline that's going to have to come back up because we have resistance. Okay. There's all the societal pressure with what happens with herbicides, all the runoff, all the, you know, mitigation stuff that we're starting to talk about in endangered species. So we need to understand which herbicides are staying where we want them to stay, yet providing weed control, right? So we don't want stuff bound to the crop residues there. We want them in the soil. These residual herbicides have to be in soil for good weed control. So that is becoming a big part of our program. We don't have the expertise in the lab to analyze. This is why we're partnering up with Dr. Mueller. Dr. Caio Brugnaro at Penn State is starting a similar lab there where they're going to be able to do. So there's a lot of interest and opportunities moving forward as far as that goes to address your question, because I don't think we have taken into account this heavy amount of residue when we're thinking about efficacy of breeze and resistance management.
Well, we're out of time, but I want to say that I could see us having a whole nother podcast as we get into precision ag, because for me, and we really can't discuss this because I've hit my limit, but utilizing cover crops brings in more variability from where I see, because you have stand, especially multi-species. Now you're increasing variability. Okay, so you have 5 ton of rye at this location, but you go to a toe slope and you have 2 ton of rye. So how does that do? There's a whole world that we need to revisit again. So
it's time for our famous three.
I'm going to move us into our final three questions because we are at that hard time limit. So, Rodrigo, what is your go-to work resource?
Yeah, so my main, go-to work resource is our A3646, which is pest management in Wisconsin food crops. That's a go-to, always have it around when growers, consultants, call me, but my colleagues, our peers, when a difficult question comes and I don't have an answer, we have an amazing group of weed scientists. We all exchange emails and help each other that way. Mm-hmm. So, this extension publication is important, but also, our peers all over the Midwest that are dealing with similar scenarios that I am here in Wisconsin.
Fantastic. Now on the more personal side, what's your favorite leisurely activity? What do you do in your free time?
What do I do in my free time? So I just, last year, just kind of went through the whole tenure process, got tenure. So it's, how that goes, right? Five, 6 years were really hectic in a good way. And also have two young girls at home, our daughters. So they're, yeah. So, I mean, they my free time is all theirs, my family here. Really enjoy, spending time with them. And then just being outdoors. We just love being outdoors, as a person in agriculture, we're always either in the field or trying to enjoy the great outdoors. So that's something I really, really enjoy. And also connecting with friends and family, because that's at the end of the day, family and friends is something that really matters to me. So,
well, Dr. Worley, where do people go to find more about your program and the Whisk Weeds Project?
Yes. So folks can visit our website, whiskweeds.info. So again, our website is whiskweeds.info. Every year, I was talking, one of the resources that I use all the time is the research report that Ryan Dwerf, research specialist in our program, puts out. I go to that resource all the time because there we have results of 40 trials that we put every year. And I also look at programs, how they're doing, but rates, the herbicide rates. So that's why I always tell growers, check our reports, check the results, and check the rates that we are using in our trials to make sure you're putting appropriate herbicide rates out there. So that is a tremendous resource. And then we try to be as active as we can on Twitter, now X. So if you're on Twitter or X, you can look us up at WiskWeeds. So all the resources that we generate as part of our research and extension efforts, we try to share them on Twitter.
Well, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Dr. Rodrigo Werle, who is the Associate Professor of Extension Cropping Systems Weed Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Y'all, if you enjoyed this podcast, hit that subscribe button so you get that notification when it comes out again. Share this video with your friends and your colleagues. If you've learned something today, for sure, leave us some comments. Let us know what you like or dislike and suggest any other guests or questions for the guests that we have. Rodrigo, thank you so much for joining us today. It was an absolute pleasure, and I hope to do this again soon.
That would be great. Thank you for having me, Brian.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.